Welcome to this Strengthening Practice podcast. We're really happy to have you join us once again. I'm Phil Rigotti, a social worker and social care trainer with Strengthening Practice, and I'm joined by my very good colleague, Annie. And Hi. We're really, really happy to have this guest podcast this time round. We've invited Lisa Cherry, who maybe doesn't need any introduction to all you folk out there listening, but we're just really thrilled to have her join us. Blogger, podcaster, trainer, relational activist, anything about trauma, recovery, resilience, Lisa Cherry is your person. Lisa, we're just really happy to have you join us. Do you want to just introduce yourself a little bit for folk that haven't heard of you?
I wouldn't even know where to start. Where does one put the last 50 years? Where do you put 50 years of your life into a bio? I'm just so happy to be here. And what can I say? Passionate about social justice, passionate about education, social work, 30 years. 30 years, yeah. I've been working in the field for 30 years in different capacities. And bring with that an academic passion as well, alongside some lived experience. You know, throw it all in the mix and you end up with a cacophony of passion. That's what you end up with.
Just let me write that bit down. Cacophony of passion.
No, I like
can't spell it, but I'm writing it down anyway. Thank you. Brilliant. What we thought, myself and Annie have been talking about this, and as we're trying to be helpful to folk out there, doing whatever they're doing, whether it's in social work or social care or psychology or education, everyone out there trying to make sense of what this period looks like and how we can all be most helpful to each other and support each other, we just thought, who better than to get yourself, Lisa, to come and give us your take? So really, we're interested to hear from you. What is your take on what's happening currently? What does it look like to you? What do you see?
Well, we've got a macro level and a micro level, and I mean, God, it's such a multi-layered thing that's happening, isn't it? And I nearly said unprecedented then, but I stopped myself.
No! There.
It's out there. It's out there. We have to, one of the things I think I'm saying a lot right now is we have to start with what we've got, where we are, with how we can help. And I know your listeners will be keen to think, how can I be of service? This is about how can I be of service during this time? And the difficulty is that that is so sullied with what I've got going on in my life, whether I've got children in my house, relatives that are poorly, my own health conditions, my own finances. All of those things are happening for all of us, while at the same time intersecting with that desire to be of service. And so one of the things that I'm seeing that I'm not massively thrilled about is that that's not necessarily being understood very well by employers. However, I've worked with a number of organisations who really get it and really understand it and are really looking after the people who are working for them and understanding the multi-layered community trauma and the systemic trauma that people will be potentially experiencing depending on where they live, what's going on for them, etc. So I think that's something, I don't know why I would have been surprised by that, but I have been. That understanding about what we need as humans to be the best that we can be. In some organisations, it's almost like apart from the staff, they can just do all this stuff regardless of all that, and anyway, get on with your caseload, and you know, so there's that kind of stuff. I think that I'd really like to start to unpick with people, and so I'm putting on my own courses for people as well as the stuff I'm doing organisationally because of that.
So there's something. Thank you. Yeah, that's really speaks to certainly what myself and Annie have been wondering about recently, in that the idea that the people that help don't need to also be helped somehow is a thread, isn't it, that we're familiar with. But the pressure that's felt to say, well, go out there and be helpful and do your day job as far as normally you're able to do, but at the same time as managing all these other things. So I'm cheered actually to hear that you've come across some local authorities that are getting that right. Is it, what's the thing that they're doing differently? How come they're understanding this? What do you think? Those folk that are able to go, yeah, we need to look after our stuff because they're human too. They must have realised that somehow, or did they already know it? What do you think?
Yeah, and I haven't been working with local authorities. It's been organisations.
Organisations, okay.
Yeah, which might actually be something interesting to explore. Mm. But in those organisations, I think what they're understanding is that at the beginning, I mean, you know, this is like span. I'm into week 7. Most people are into week 6. I started a week earlier. I pulled back from everything because I could see this coming. So I'm now well into week 7, and it feels like the strangest 7 weeks ever. And that bit at the beginning feels like such a long time ago, because the adaptation process for myself, and we'll all be different about how long it takes us depending on what's going on, has kind of embedded. So I'm pretty well adapted to what's going on currently. But at the beginning, when it first happened and I was in that process, like everybody else, I was very tired. I couldn't get anything done in the day. I couldn't make sense on a embodied level what was going on. And so those organizations that kind of really got that were able to go within themselves from a very senior level, understand that they were having an embodied experience, develop the ability to articulate that, accept that it was going on for themselves, enabling an acceptance of that going therefore on for other people. And it's that thing, isn't it? If you cannot show yourself compassion and you cannot have acceptance for your own ways of dealing with things, your ability to do that for other people is hampered.
It's really interesting that you say that, because we've got a webinar coming up with Dr. Helen Rodwell on remote assessments. And that's one of the first things that she talked about, was when this first kicked off, that she was in such a state of sort of anxiety herself that she, so she's a clinical psychologist who undertakes assessments as an expert witness. And what she said, she was just in such a state of anxiety that she was unable, what she knew that she was unable to do an assessment that had any sort of depth or quality to it, because she was managing herself first and she needed that time to almost get up to speed. And I would say I experienced exactly the same. And I can remember having a conversation with you, Lisa, quite early on, where I was flapping and I was panicking. And Lisa, I have to say, really calmed me down, and she was brilliant and made me cry and everything. But she was great, because what Lisa helped me to realise was that actually everything I was feeling was normal and I needed to feel it. It's like a process, isn't it, Lisa? You've kind of got, yes, you've got to feel it. You've got to see that it's there. And once you see that it's there, you go, oh, okay, that's what I'm experiencing. That's normal under the context that we're living in. So therefore, now I know where I am, and I know that that might change. So it's incredibly interesting to hear that you have also been through that, and that's quite normal, isn't it? Would you say that sort of this is everybody's experiencing a similar thing, and maybe people are getting stuck at not acknowledging that they're in that situation?
Well, we don't live in ways that enable us to go within and experience our bodies deeply, right? That's a choice that we make. We make that choice. I'm going to work with what I've got. I'm going to work with myself on a daily basis. And that means being with myself wherever I am. Now, the majority of people would not choose to do that. And there are many, many ways that people don't have to do that. They can go shopping, they can drink, they can smoke, they can have sex, they can be on their phones all the time, they can keep ordering things from, you know, to be delivered. And there's a whole raft of things that are available in a society that has more wealth than it knows what to do with, to suppress what's going on within yourself. Now, what happened was that most of those things that people have to use was removed, and left people with all sorts of feelings. And my hunch is that people who were not able to be there for other people abandoned themselves. Mm-hmm. So there's that process of abandoning yourself in a scenario which is full of abandonment and loss, which is this pandemic. And so we then start to see layers of old trauma, triggers, all sitting on top of each other, while at the same time potentially being in positions where you're also meant to be modeling how to do this to other people. And it's not about blame. It's not about judgment. It's about the way we live, the disconnection that the last however long has given us, but the particularly the last 10 years has created a space for deep, deep disconnection, disconnection from self, from community, from relationships, from each other. The interconnectedness has been eroded, and it wasn't particularly strong before because we'd had a lot, you know, that journey began really with Thatcherism. Mm-hmm. We cannot take what is happening outside of a context of social justice and politics. It's not possible to do that. So that's what I think on that level. On a spiritual level, I think we're in a very transformative period. And that's a different conversation. But I think there are many aspects to what is happening. And it's a very tricky time, depending where you are on your journey. And I think what I said to you when we spoke, when you were in that place, was all around self-acceptance, reminding you the journey you have taken previously, mm-hmm. which is should be something to draw strength from. There are people who are experiencing adversity who are not accustomed to experiencing adversity.
Yeah.
And so that well is not so deep, that adversarial growth well is not so deep. And I just wanted to remind you in that moment when we spoke that you have a deep adversarial growth well. Mm. And but that doesn't mean that we don't have difficult feelings. I had a really, I've had several really interesting days across the last 7 weeks. And it doesn't stop the feelings. It just means there is a well upon which to draw. Mm-hmm.
That was certainly something that really spoke to me when we talked was about that. Now come on, Annie, whilst you haven't lived through a pandemic before, you have lived through trauma before. And it was cast your mind back. Remember what you did to get through those times. So what I did when my son was removed, what I did when my eldest son died. And I find myself now, so I'm working with families as part of Survive and Safeguard, and I'm finding myself now modeling behaviours. So I'm able to say to mums and dads, but predominantly mums that I'm working with, okay, so you are separated from your children right now. We don't worry about what's going to happen in September. We don't worry about what's going to happen when you're all back together, because that, parents have children in different places, and contact is hit and miss. And there is an overwhelming anxiety of, oh God, what do I do when this all ends? And it's just bringing parents back to that space of, no, we deal with what's happening right now. Today is Tuesday. We'll deal what's happening on Tuesday. We'll deal with what's happening on Tuesday. But even on a more micro level than that, where, it's now 10 to 10 in the morning, so we'll deal with what's happening for the next hour, and then when we get through that hour, we go on to the next hour and we look at what we need to do and what we want to do and what we can do. And I guess that it's sort of that learned behavior from me is now standing me in really good stead for the days that are quite difficult and that I feel overwhelmed and I think, oh God, I've got work to do, I've got my work in terms of Survive and Safeguarding and working with families. I've got my Family Justice Council work. I've got my strength and practice work. I've got to homeschool my children. I've got to do the housework. I've got to be a good wife. I've got to be a good mother. I've got to be a good friend. And you just go, bah, overwhelm. And I go, no.
You just need to have like a hairbrush. Mm. Actually, that's actually all we need. Mm-hmm. If we can get through this with our hair intact, right?
And, I love that.
and our mental health not being too damaged, mm-hmm. then I think we will have actually achieved quite a lot.
I agree.
And if at the risk of making what was a jovial point a serious one, I think actually, if we talk about embodiment and say, for many people, the state of our hair, it is outward evidence of us now embodying what's going on, isn't it? Because you can deny it otherwise, can't you? You can kind of go, oh, well, I'm all fine because I'm a helping person. I go out and help other people. But when we all look in the mirror and kind of go, yeah, but I do need a haircut, then that reminds us. But then that reminds us, doesn't it, that actually we are all caught up in this, and there is a consequence in our own bodies. And I'm really fascinated listening to both of you. Actually, there's so much richness in what you're talking about. That for people certainly that I know that are social workers out there doing an incredibly tough job in a difficult period, just being able to remind them that their own responses are a normal response to an abnormal circumstance. And unpacking the things that you've just been talking about, Annie, and saying, well, okay, well, there's layers to this, all those parts of yourself that you have to manage, but they're still caught up in with those higher level tasks that they have to try to still achieve that live within their job role. Mm. But certainly what we've started to say a lot from Strength in Practice to folk is, well, what does this person need from you right now here today? And how do you feel able to deliver that? How are you doing today? How did you wake up? What have you had to deal with already before you logged on from your sitting room to try and help those families that are living in risky and difficult situations? So I think it's powerful, isn't it, to get that sense of saying, well, make contact with what's going on in your own body first. What are you feeling? Where do you think that's come from? And where have you felt this before? And what happened last time when you felt that? I think that's a really powerful message for folks, isn't it?
One of the things that I did in those early days that feel like such a long time ago are actually only 7 weeks. The things I did was a 21 days to self-care hashtag on Twitter. And I don't really, self-care really sounds so woolly compared to what I was actually talking about, which is that kind of connective and collective care. And one of the reasons I wanted to do that was because I felt that it was important for me to show up in whatever way I showed up, which is what you're talking about as well. I wanted to show up however I was as a means to be able to say, that's okay. It's that acceptance thing. So that, and the amount of messages that I got from people, and there was one day I just said, I can't, and I did it as a live video. I just said, I can't show up today because I don't want to do a video. And people loved that because they were like, yeah, I didn't want to show up today either. And it's like, and that's okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess where it gets tricky is where it's not okay to not show up. Mm-hmm. But actually, it might be okay to show up and own that you didn't want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to show up today because this feels really hard. It feels really hard. And if it feels really hard for me, I can't imagine how hard it must be feeling for you right now. And having a much deeper walking alongside with conversation.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. If I guess we're talking from a practitioner's point of view, but thinking about it from a family's point of view, if I can challenge you on that, how realistic do you think it is for a family to feel able to say, I didn't want to be here today, or can I have my camera off? You know, if you are a parent involved with social care, do you think that the same rules apply? And if they don't, how can social workers or those working with families level the playing field a little bit?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think it's a bigger question, actually, because you know, as a system that social work is, it is still full of individuals, and it's also still full of teams, and it's still full of top-down processes and ways of doing things. And I mean, I've worked across so many local authorities. Some are incredibly good at holding risk, walking a line, and being a support. And there are others that are actually very punitive, not able to hold risk very well, have a very high staff turnover. And so depending on where you are on each layer and each component is going to make a difference as to how much you can be with a family rather than do to that family. And of course, you know, I'm very drawn to local authorities that are very much walking alongside, doing with, and that facilitate and work alongside communities. So there are a plethora of relationships, people in place that can hold each other, because otherwise you're left with a situation where you've got a family in a tiny weeny tower block flat with no access to any other humans, no outdoor space, no systems in place, and then getting punished because the house is a mess, they're not able to show up, etc., etc. Now, I guess as a social worker, you're going to have to make a decision about which local authority you align with. That's, you know, that's a big question, but Annie, great question.
Yeah, thank you.
To which I have no definitive answer, of course, because it's so so big. But that would be my hope, that people actually learn different ways of being alongside people through this process that then will change and alter the way that we do things for the better.
And on that as well, I guess, would you, is there any sort of advice, and I know that this could take you all day, but is there any advice, hints, tips that you would give those working with families, both for themselves and whilst working with families?
You can't take anyone any more deeply than you've taken yourself. So you really have to go on that journey within yourself in order to be the kind of practitioner that is able to do the most difficult task of ensuring that the needs of the child are paramount, but that the parents are not lost in that, because it is understood also that those children will become adults and those adults have once been children.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
It's really powerful, isn't it? I've just been scribbling all the way through what you've been talking about, Lisa, because I think there's so many useful points there. The idea that you need to go deep to be able to take someone else deep, which is about you going on the journey together with them, which actually is, we're talking about empathy, really, aren't we? And the ability to really put myself in someone else's world and understand what's happening for them. Time's kind of caught us up, folks. What fascinating insights. I'm just going away with loads of things to think about. I've got post-it notes all over my desk.
That's my legacy, Phil.
I really appreciate post-it notes being all over my desk, because there are points, folks listening, really, that what Lisa's helped us understand really is that, of course, it's okay for us to really explore our own experience of this. And then what we're able to do is to go and be with other people, turn up, be there with them, be present, bring yourself to work today, I wrote down. And the idea of being able to be with somebody has to come from a place, doesn't it, of us understanding what this has been like for me as an individual. What mattered to me in this period? And if it mattered to me, of course it mattered to that family that I'm trying to help, that family that have already got struggles and stresses and strains. And I need to hold on to that first, don't I, before I go and do whatever it is that the system has tasked me with doing in terms of safeguarding or whatever it is. So many takeaways there. I think you started off by saying that maybe this was going to be a cacophony of passion. And I just think I think we probably only just started to scrape the surface of those layers of passion that you have, Lisa.
True story.
And Lisa, you're going to be doing some stuff, training on this sort of topic, I guess, relationships.
Yeah, well, tomorrow, and the webinar's full, I'm looking at grief and loss with a cruise bereavement specialist, because we're soaked in grief and loss right now. I mean, it's so present with us. just thought we really need to have a combination of that. So that's packed webinar. I've still got some spaces on Thursday. I'm doing a webinar. It's called The Story of Us, and it's really about how we build that. How do we build the narrative of now for the future? How do we do that with families and children so that when they're looking back on this experience, there's a narrative about what it was all about and what happened? How do we keep ourselves well? And how do we actually do this difficult task of having relationships online? Mm-hmm. So if people want to come on that, it would be very relevant to the conversation actually that we've had today.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's brilliant. Phil, any parting thoughts?
I suppose just to, on the back of what Lisa's saying, we'd love to continue this conversation with anybody out there in whatever way we can. And I think, like Lisa's just saying, you know, we're all working out how to do this relationship thing differently. And I think what seems to matter to all of us, certainly the three of us here today, is that we dig in deep and go, actually, this is about human experience, isn't it? This is about all of us understanding from each other what this has been like, and taking our personal journey out there into the world of work and going, okay, well, what does this look like to this other person? I wonder if they had a similar journey to mine. So as Lisa's saying, Lisa's got all kinds of things going on. She's got some webinars. She's got some other bits and bobs going on, as have we. The easiest thing to do is to say, you can certainly find us at strengthenpractice.co.uk. You can find Lisa at lisacherry.co.uk. You can find us both on Twitter. I think Lisa_LisaCherry on Twitter. At strengthening P on Twitter. Just get connected. Let's have this conversation. Let's talk around it a little bit more. We'll see you online, no doubt. Lisa, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you taking time out of all those other things that you do just to have this conversation with us. I think we might meet up again and do this again, don't you?
I would love to. Thank you so much for asking me. It's a real privilege always to be asked. Thank you.
No, thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Take care, everybody.